Welcome to Comedy Potpourri. I'm Paul.
And I'm Alan.
And today we're going to talk about UFOs. Me. Especially about crashes.
Oh, help me.
Okay, so the biggest one that everybody talks about is...
Oh, they're always going to talk about the grandfather of them all, Roswell.
Of course, it never happened.
Nope, never did.
Nope.
It was a balloon. Really?
That crashed and, it crashed and left debris over 100-something feet.
Oh, yeah.
And left a crater.
Supposedly left a crater. Supposedly.
Supposedly. But, you know, there's a...
There's some crash test dummies that'll tell you otherwise.
Oh, yeah. And if you want to know about crash test dummies, they were not developed until they're 3 years later, 3 to 4 years later.
Yeah, so how did that work?
Yeah.
Oh, nice one. Good
secrets.
Job.
They're the secrets from the government. We make crash test dummies to throw at the enemy.
Sure. I don't buy a damn bit of that.
But that balloon they sent up, which was Project... Oh...
You had these, the Twinkle or something like that?
Something like that. No. But it was a project they had. It was a mogul.
Project Mogul, yeah.
Mogul. And what it had, it was actually 600-something square feet. 600-something feet high. And what they don't tell you is that they had chaser planes chasing them because they didn't want anybody to go into them.
Oh, okay.
So they had planes actually going around it. And so when it came down, the planes followed it. And then when it went over the horizon, people couldn't see it, but it was still coming down. Well, it wasn't like dropping. It was coming down.
Now, let's put it in a time frame here. So one of the big things that we have to remember is that all this stuff that we're talking about initially takes place a couple of years after the end of the Second World War and the dropping of the first atomic bomb at the Trinity site in New Mexico. And after that situation, a lot of bomb groups and stuff like that were isolated in New Mexico and Nevada. And in that particular area, Roswell was one such place.
Right. And so one of the persons that was actually to help and go there, and he was told to go there and stuff, was Jesse Marcel.
Correct.
And he's the one that first came out. And if you see the pictures, he's holding supposedly it was a weather balloon. Okay. But there's rumors, and there's was written down that they actually came out first with.
There was wreckage initially that he brought back. They took pictures of that, and then they removed it from some accounts I remember show him supposedly showing the original wreckage, and then it shows him showing a weather balloon wreckage.
Which is, and Blanchard was there, too, and he's part of this, too.
Yeah.
And if you want to know, I think it's Mayor, or one of the head honchos that was all part of this that end up telling that what they need to do, end up being head of Project Blue Book.
Surprise! Now, the funny thing is that this topic, the grandfather of all UFO crashes, usually seems to be one of the biggest ones, and it has the most multitude of varying degrees of how things were reported. If you go back, I think the initial crash takes place during a severe lightning storm, correct?
Right.
Over the Mac Brazel Ranch. That's just, I think it's like either, I want to say it's like... northwest of Roswell, New Mexico. And apparently during this massive lightning storm, something was hit, and it was witnessed by some other people, from what I understand as well. About maybe 20 miles away.
Right. There was other people, and the military was not the first ones to go there.
No.
So it actually was a sheriff, I think a rancher, and a couple other people. There's so much mystery about this. It's
lots of misdirections going on here.
Well, one is, like they said, the reporter actually came out and saw it and wrote down that they'd had a crash.
And the other thing, too, is that there was a report from a U.S. Air Force person on a teletype or something like that, too, I believe.
Right, it was. And before this happened, in Rainier, right before the crash, they saw, I think, an airliner saw seven unidentified flying objects, UFOs,
okay.
Seven of them going super fast, heading south.
Now, this isn't the Arnold case where he sees a bunch of the flying discs cruising
around Rainier, but it's around the same time.
Okay.
It's around that day that when it happened.
Okay.
And they said that they saw it and came down and stuff, so.
Kenneth Arnold, I think, is the guy's
Kenneth
name.
Yeah, Kenneth Arnold. But it was a different airline person.
Yeah.
And so what happened is it crashed, it has all this debris, and it has mystic, I call it mystic, has memory metal.
Oh, so yeah, because they could crush it in their hands from at least the reversions that they show on TV or something like that in the specials. They show the metal being crushed in your hand, and then as soon as your hand is released from the metal, it goes back to its normal form.
Well, yeah, and so Jesse Marcel, he was, I don't think he was a colonel yet, or major. I think he was a major then. So he actually brought the stuff home, put it on the table, and his wife and his son looked at it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And so he actually crushed one up, and just like, you know, how you do with aluminum foil, when you crush it, you got all that foil stuff, but it didn't do that. It went back to its original flatness.
That's true. Actually, and I was just looking up here real quickly. So Arnold had seen that stuff right around June 24th, 1947. The crash for Roswell happened at what? It was in 47 as well.
Yes.
But I don't remember the exact date.
I don't remember that either. So
that, unfortunately,
I don't have that information. Oh, we can look it up, though.
Yes, we can. It'd probably be faster by you than it is for me on this crazy thing.
So we found out that it was in June that it did it.
Correct. Kenneth Arnold had noticed his flying saucer discs flying near Mount Rainier in June 24th, 1947.
Right. And so, there were seven of them. But what I understand, too, that has also been said that there was three. And one was forced landed. And they actually got that one.
Force landed.
It force landed down. That it actually didn't crash. It just landed, and they actually got the aliens out of there. This is one of the things that was brought up in the when they were talking to Lou
Elizondo.
Yes, who was head of a department that was in charge of all this, and now he has come out, but he will not tell you the top secret stuff. He'll kind of hint about certain things, but he says he will not give the top secret stuff out. So that's what's happened. It's very interesting that he's out. He's part of a program that was secret. A secret program that was actually monitoring UFOs.
And it's an outreach of some of the previous stuff of the Project Blue Book and Grudge and Twinkle and I think a couple other projects.
Twinkle, twinkle!
Right. Twinkle, twinkle, little star.
Oh, and Sign. There was one called
Project
Sign.
Project Sign. Project Grudge.
I wonder if that got the movie from that. Signs.
Well, you know, I don't know where M. Night Shyamalan comes up with his ideas, but I'm sure it's something
that
along
that would
those
be
lines.
Kind of cool if he did.
Oh,
it?
That would be.
Yeah.
Because I've seen some other stuff, and it leads right into the Men in Black I just was watching earlier this morning. So, over my cup of coffee.
That is strange. So, anyway, there was, at least as recorded, there's two incidents there. Mm-hmm. And the other one was like, what, 75 miles away?
Yeah.
75 miles away. And it's very interesting because that one crashed too. But that one had a lot of people looking, I mean, that were witnesses of it. There's actually one where a couple was there and they went down there before anybody got there. They were camping. This is the story. They went down there and camped and they saw it, a crash. They went over the mountains, went down, saw it, went down, and said that there was actually a live alien giving first aid to the other ones, and they saw everything going on. And as soon as they were down there, they saw other people and the military come right away, and they hid. They drove back into the bushes, and they waited until everybody's gone, and they left, and kind of looked around, see if they could get anything, you know.
Well, of course.
Yes.
Yeah, because, you know, hey, we might make $1 million off this. We'll be on Easy Street, babe. That's exactly what I'm sure that's exactly what the guy was thinking. It's like, nobody's around. We can probably get in there and just, like, snag some stuff, and then we can sell it.
Yeah. I mean, I would. So what they did is, like, so they had that one had archaeologist.
Yep.
A farmer. The police came.
Yep.
Sheriff. I think they had the reporter came to that one too, but there was definitely the farmer came out there and was looking at everything. So it's very interesting what they did.
There's, again, we're talking the grandfather of almost all UFO crashes and so on like that. So there's such a variety of stuff out there. It's, we're just doing a quick rehash on this particular one, but. Think of yourself as a Titanic, and Roswell is the iceberg.
Yes, definitely it's iceberg.
And that's what really hit everything on top of the head. Now, again, you've got a nation or nations coming out of World War II. You've exploded one of the most powerful weapons in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Oppenheimer and those guys doing, you know, the Manhattan Project. Boom. Suddenly Trinity has put the world on notice. I know there's a little bit of a click. Sorry about that. Puts the world on notice that suddenly we are a nuclear power.
Yeah. I mean, it's very interesting. So what they've also did there is, if you want to look at who was in charge, they had a lot of people. Oh, and then this book I was reading about, totally, it sounded like, oh, all these people, you know, I'm thinking, oh, God, this would be a good one about, you know, all these witnesses. And then all of a sudden he starts telling why these witnesses weren't any good. Well, he didn't interview any of the witnesses. He basically went in the archives, read, and then wrote his book.
And who's this person you're speaking of?
I don't have it right now, but it's called, I think it's Roswell, what the answers, something that, Roswell, the answers you didn't get, or something like that. And it was very interesting. I mean, I started like, okay. But then they're going, well, you know, Marcel was told to fly it back, but he couldn't fly. Well, you know what? Come on, guy. Don't be stupid. When they say fly it back, he's a freaking major. He's going to be in back of the plane flying it back. He's not going to personally fly it. And so he basically, with Marcel, he was just all over him, like marking him down and how he was exaggerated everything. And I'm going, if I was a UFOologist, I was going, this is a book that basically is written by somebody who doesn't want anybody to know the information.
You have like a couple ghostwriters or something like that at that particular time.
Right, right.
But in this particular case, there were so many people that were involved when they first heard about it. The teletype comes out across the news wire saying that they've recovered flying saucers near Roswell, New Mexico. And the military says, no, we're going to put a kibosh on that one. Listen here, Marcel. I want you to get out there. I want you to get a control of this situation. And he's put in charge of, you know, going out to not only I don't know if he was part of that second one, but I definitely know when he's going out to Max Brazel's ranch with this downed UFO with the bodies and stuff that they had to go and recover. So that gets taken care of.
Well, so when I was watching Roswell, Hangar 18, and the Blue Room, done by a journalist, who's done by a journalist, believe it or not, and he did interviews, and he interviewed Jesse Marcel III, because he's part of this movie, right? And what I found out is that they had, when they found these aliens, what do you put them in? So what they asked is the mortician to have an airtight,
hermetically sealed
coffins, which some are. So they actually did that, and they said that the guy said actually that he saw there. And then, but this, you know, the other thing is like, well, this writer said that basically he went into the airport there, and that there's no records of anybody being in there, such and such. Okay. I know personally, sorry about that. Personally, I've been in some high tech stuff. I don't know what that click is.
We'll find. I don't either.
So what we have is they don't sign in and out. They don't.
They don't just, do it.
They don't sign in and out. They just don't do that. They if it's top secret, it's top secret. There's no paperwork. If the paperwork's done later, not now.
Yeah, probably, definitely not now. Why? You know, if Men in Black were a thing back in the day, and prior to Roswell, I'm sure somebody in a secret organization, not the OSS, which would be eventually become the CIA.
Right, the OSS was involved.
Right. So I'm sure they probably said, yeah, we got to get a hold of this technology. We can't let any of this leak out.
Yeah. Yeah.
We want to find out what this is all about. We have been aware of sightings, and the FBI has been making notations of stuff, of unknown phenomena that has been investigated, but nothing concrete has ever been brought up.
Well, yeah.
At least that we know of.
We know of.
Damn you, Hoover!
So, the what they've said is that if you go, there's some of the things that were said that not necessarily everything went to Floyd Wright, that there's other bases that this stuff went to.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and Blanchard, who is part of this, also was at the sites. And what I comes back further in this Jesse Marcel III, that excuse me, that Blanchard basically was friends with Marcel, and later on they would actually sit and talk about what happened and talk about the incidents. And Blanchard brought out this I-beam.
Oh.
Small I-beam. And it had purplish colored icons on it. I want to say icons. They think it was more like a hieroglyphic type of thing.
That's what I've heard, is yeah. There were some hieroglyphics or something like that that Marcel had actually seen.
Yeah, it was like two moon, crescent moons facing each other and some other stuff. And so Jesse Marcel III actually said yes, he did that. And that he had seen it. I mean, he's the great-grandson of Jesse Marcel. So, but Blanchard could come over, and they had this too. So, I think, and so finally, what I understand too is that they finally got Jesse Marcel's, found his diary, and that was not turned over. Was supposed to be turned over because it had certain information in it, and that basically kind of leads, it says it's kind of a treasure map type of thing, to where maybe there's more information, also items.
Okay.
And that's where they leave off, so we never know. So
So you got Wright-Patterson Air Force Base.
Right.
In Ohio, if I remember correctly.
Ohio. And then you got Area 51.
Correct. And S4, which is the other part of the testing ground or the proving ground for secret military projects such as the U-2.
Was that Skunk Works there?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. The U-2 plane, which ran concurrently up until the late 60s and then was supplanted by the SR-71 Blackbird.
Right.
Which has the remarkable of going, was it 3.5 Mach 5?
Yes. Yes.
And it gets so hot. It starts to glow, but it's so high up in the atmosphere that it's cold enough to keep the engines from overheating and melting.
Right.
You know? But Skunk Works has been known of that, and also is the place where the B-1 and the stealth bomber and the stealth fighters have been developed as well.
Skunk Works is not a government agency.
No, it is not, which we'll probably get into a little bit
so,
later.
Right. So, but what they found out is a lot of the stuff that is in Hangar 18, Blue Room, in Hangar 18 at Floyd Wright. A lot of information about that. It's very interesting. They said that basically they have the aliens down there and just in the ones that passed away in a contain, you know, like a...
They're in a basement.
They're in a basement.
They're in the basement.
Everything gets placed in a basement. It's just like you don't want to see it. It's like if you were a space serial killer, you know, I'm going to put those aliens in a hermetically sealed thing and I'm going to stick them down in the basement.
Let's just put them in the basement.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure that's the
I got plastic barrels.
I'm sure they got plastic. Oh, plastic. You're so smooth.
Don't put it in the tub and do it.
Don't put aliens in the tub.
They might melt.
Yep. Anyway, sorry. I had to get some humor in there someplace. I'm getting tired of that craziness. But the aliens, just everything about this particular project, and they split up the bodies and then the craft recovery of all that material.
Right.
And then having a cover-up to say, oh, they were mistaken. There were no flying saucers, no little green men, which I don't even think was a thing at the time until many years later in the 50s when Technicolor became a thing.
Right.
They decided to make aliens green.
When they're really gray.
And it's like, no, they're really gray. The only time that green really comes into play is Star Trek. With the Green Girls.
The Green Girls.
Von Krieg.
Yes, that was Yvonne Krieg, wasn't
it? Yeah, Von Krieg's one of them.
Gosh, yes.
Susan Oliver is one of the other ones. She's the very first one in the pilot. But anyway, getting back off of the... Getting off the Green Girl, sorry. You've got this big cover-up, and then suddenly you've got the weather balloons thing. And then, years later... That they talk about the crash test dummies are the ones that were actually the bodies that were mentioned in, but that never happened. They didn't have any crash test dummies at that time.
No.
You said that during your review on the Roswell, you said that the crash test dummies weren't developed until like 3 years after the fact.
Something like that. Yeah, they were saying.
So
that
in
they
1950.
Yeah.
So how does that report work? There's some subterfuge going on there, man.
Well, there's some other things that they said happened that were not even happened yet. So, but when they did this material, they sent it out. They didn't do the full testing. So one of the things that I saw that they actually sent it to Stanford.
Okay, yeah, I didn't know about that.
They had a little piece, and they wanted it tested, and it was a meteorologist kind of person. Anyway, they did some analyzing, and at one point they said it was 99% or 99% aluminum, but it had manganese in it, or magnesium in it, and some other stuff. But they said that it was not a mix that they do. But later on they found out that atomically, that it was not. It was nothing that we've ever had. later on in 2012, 2014, around there.
Right.
They actually found out that atomic-based, down to the atom, is something that we do not have here.
Something that's not on the periodic table that we have?
Is not from this world.
Nope.
That was exactly said. It was something that was not found on this world.
Okay, then. Well, if it's not found here, naturally occurring, it has to be man-made or forced together out of other elements to make that particular thing, right?
Right. Yeah. So it'd have to be. When they found the UFOs, by the way, they were just not all crashed up and stuff, but they have found the one in, was north in San, I don't have it, I had it in front of me here. Anyway, it's northeast from when the first site, the second one, and basically when it skid a long way, I mean, before it crashed. So it came down, like, bounced. They said it said basically it hit and bounced, and then, right?
Yeah, imagine, like, one of those old 50s movies where you see the saucer, or better yet, like a out of Star Trek, you see one of the saucer section come crashing into Noridian 3, and it crash lands into the planet and skids along a gully within a small valley of sorts. Think of it as something like that, but on probably a much smaller scale.
Well, yeah, and so what they did, they finally had somebody figure it out, because they had this kid. They didn't do it at the time, which I would have been going, okay, how long is this skid? And what's the weight? They figure out what the weight is and everything, for how deep the skid is. So when they went back, they actually took this guy back there, and it was the original farmer, went back, and they found that the water, when it came down, water, the water ridges, they call them water ridges or whatever, it came down, certain areas around there that it actually came down a certain way. These went the opposite, which means it was going up the hill.
Okay.
So they did it. So they figured out later on that craft had to go at least 1,200 miles per hour when it crashed.
Which remarkably is funny, because if you take a look at the Kenneth Arnold thing with his traveling near Mount Rainier, the vehicles he determined airspeed was 1,200 miles an hour.
Oh, wow. Imagine that.
Imagine. I scratch my chin.
And what's Mach?
Oh, Jesus. I forget exactly how fast that is.
It's not 1,000. It's less than 1,000.
I think it's less than 1,000.
Yeah. So these guys were doing, and they don't, when they go, they do not make a sound. There's no sonic boom. So before that, though, this is interesting, that one of the disc would do if it was flying, because at that time they were thinking about the flying wing and everything else. And they found that in a disc, when you go forward, it has less resistance. And on the back, there's no drag because it comes down, tails down. And this is very aerodynamic.
Okay, so you have more or less an intact vehicle.
Right.
And it's nearby. Now, my question is, and I haven't seen anything because I'd have to do a huge amount of digging, what the weather reports were like for that particular area. Was that lightning or electrical storm still going
thunderstorm.
On?
Thunderstorm. They said thunderstorm.
So was it still going on? I mean, so Roswell...
Probably not. Excuse me. Probably not.
So what caused this other vehicle to crash?
That's a good question. Well, they said at one point that also somebody said that they were too connected. They were connected. Like they were touching each other and then they crashed. Wish they could have hit each other. Or they were transferring something and then something happened. Maybe they were refueling.
Could be rare, but it's a possibility. But it seems weird to me that you would be you'd have two. I mean, yes, you have the luminescent orbs that come together and then part and then they split up and then there's little strings or something like a bead of pearls or something like that from these things, but a saucer attached to another saucer, and it gets hit, and they go in two different directions.
I think what happened is that they crashed into each other. They got boom, and phew.
Maybe that storm had something to do with it.
That could have, yeah. Could have, like, shorted them out or overcharged something in there.
Oh,
yeah.
that would be more likely.
So this is what everybody says. Well, they didn't find any, like, electrical or anything there. They're not going to report they did that.
Why would you? If they're just, there's nothing here to see. It's just a weather balloon.
The aliens are not here.
These are not the aliens you're looking for. I'm sure the OSS had Ben Kenobi in mind and said, these are not the aliens you're looking for. In fact, these aren't aliens at all. Have at you.
That's funny.
Anyway.
And then the... they said it was like a 6,000 series aluminum, the piece that they found. But now they're saying nitrile, which is a memory stuff. And they're finding they've actually made, you know what, they made that after the crash.
Mm-hmm. So you've got pieces of metal from two different crash sites. And who's going to do that? Does the military have that kind of capability of doing that kind of reverse engineering?
No.
Bingo.
So, which brings us to other places when we talked about skunk works and stuff. But back then, I think they just had it in storage until they could find a company to do it. You know, so the big companies that they say are involved is Boeing, right? Raytheon.
Lockheed Martin.
Lockheed Martin. All the big flight places. But also Bigelow.
Oh, Robert Bigelow.
Bigelow. They said that he is actually doing reverse engineering. So basically what we have, the government has, is the bodies and some of the intact. There's actually intact UFO they have. So there's one that actually... intact, but they said we're not smart enough to reverse engineer. We just can't. We don't have the technology right now, or the
knowledge.
Imagine that. Here come down these aliens and spacecraft, and we can't. Like, oh, we can do that. Not.
No, that's definitely not going to happen. Do you think Marvin the Martian is going to come down to and is going to share his PU-36 space modulator and he's going to... No, he's not going to share that with Earthlings. Dumb rabbit. Tricks are for kids.
Tricks are for kids.
That's exactly what that is. But, I mean, there were some... The other thing I wanted to get into a little bit today was there were some other incidents that are always termed a version of Roswell. And I've got a couple of them that I came across, which is... kind of interesting. There's one I remember hearing about on some show, and I went into a little bit more depth on this one, called the Kecksburg UFO incident that takes place in December 9th, 1965, where some people both in Detroit and Michigan and Windsor, Ontario, had seen a large fireball go into the Kecksburg forest. And there was some debris, and then there was some stuff that people were concerned about because this was 1965. We're talking not quite the peak of the Cold War, but something fairly close to it, you know. And of course, we're also in Vietnam at this particular time. A lot of spy stuff, a lot of spy craft. So people were thinking maybe this might be a down satellite or perhaps something along those lines that went down in this area. And they, you know, of course, another cover-up has already been implemented because they learned the problems that they had with Roswell, and so they decided to go with that kind of stuff. A lot of people are told, you never saw anything. There's nothing here. It's a meteorite.
Okay, now we know where Lucas got all that.
Oh, he totally did, right? Yeah, there's according to some other publications, about a year and a half later, in a thing called Sky and Telescope, they talked about at 4:40 p.m. EST, Eastern Standard Time, for those people who aren't in the know, the FAA received 23 reports from airplane aircraft pilots, and they just talked about, and there was a recorded shockwaves created by this fireball as it passed through the atmosphere, and then it crash landed. And then there was a number of other people, and of course there are all these little testaments, and you always find these on certain things like the Sci-Fi Channel, which kind of cracks me up, because if it's even moderately sci-fi oriented, or it's got Men in Black or something, you can bet they're going to have some, their finger on that one.
Oh, so what happened is, this is what they're thinking, is that it was brought up about the Men in Black, is that when they had the second one after, like, Project Blue Book, that there's another program has started, and those people were actually were a little bit more tougher, and they wanted to make sure that nothing was going on, and they think that's when the Men in Black started.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. So if I'm hearing it correctly, so
after the 60s.
So with the folding of Blue Book back in, was it 68?
Yeah, it was early.
It sounds to me that the Men in Black were instigated by probably a couple different groups working together, which would have been both private industry and the feds, being probably a partial of like the NSA, CIA.
Oh.
And maybe a little bit of the FBI mixed in.
Wow. God, that could be the Majestic 12?
Well, there might be something to that.
Considering most of them end up working for the CIA, NSA, FBI, or
and some private contractors.
Yes, yes. We bring up Mr. Bush.
Oh yeah, not now. Vannevar Bush is a scientific director. He was brought in by, not Eisenhower, but by Truman, I believe.
Yes.
And he was a person who was brought in to deal with some of the stuff going on during World War II. And he had had some dealings with the Manhattan Project and Oppenheimer. But he was pinned with dealing with this sighting at Roswell. And he put together the MJ-12, or the Majestic 12.
Right.
Now, he's no relation to George W.
No.
Or anything like that. Though that was my first assumption when I saw the name. I was just like, really? Come on. Things are thick in the bush.
Well, let's not beat around.
Oh. Anyway, so, but this guy, if you take a look at his resume, just from his scientific stuff, he knows a lot.
Oh, the guy was a genius.
He's a freaking brainiac.
Yeah.
Was it that differential analyzer I had mentioned earlier? It's like, what the hell? The guy's coming up with all this crazy stuff. So, yeah, why not have these scientific advisors pull together a large group of scientists to make the best sense of what these have? And so you're bringing in the best in the field that you can think of, and also private industry, to make the best use of this material, because the military doesn't have the time or the inclination for this. They're thinking about dealing with the commies.
Oh, yeah. That's just the big thing was about, yeah. And so they didn't want to do, had so much going on their plate that they just, yeah. Can you imagine that, though? Okay. What are you guys going to, let's get 12 guys together and stuff. Oh, by the way, when they're gone, they said that another group, different group, stepped in. Yeah. Not a Majestic 12, but a different, like Majestic 12, stepped in to take their place to do control things.
Okay.
The thing is, like Schiff, Representative or Senator Schiff, he actually tried to get in and get information, and this group said no. And so there's been a lot of different groups that have been going in there, and they said that there's actually a group that controls what's going on. And even, I think it was Clinton and some other ones tried to get in to see what there was, and basically
they were shut down.
They were shut down. Yeah. Somebody was, Goldwater. Goldwater asked about the Blue Room and the aliens, and by a colonel, he basically got really angry and says, "We will not discuss this anymore."
I heard that story.
Yeah.
Barry Goldwater, you know. Yeah, no, I had heard that story before about him getting shot down. It's like, no, he got the military person he was talking to got really pissed with him.
Yeah, just basically cut him off. Says, no, you don't want to talk about this. We're not going to talk about this. You don't want to know about this.
No.
And there's been comments saying basically some of these people that are afraid to come out because there's been rumors that some people have accidentally had accidents.
They had accidents? Question mark.
Well, one of the...
What kind of accident?
One of the viewers, I don't know if you knew this, they had a viewer. This is interesting. Government had a viewer after Blue Book, and they called it a... He was a viewer of where he could sit in a room and look and concentrate at some place.
Oh, so you're talking about remote viewing.
Remote viewer.
Okay.
And that he died unexpectedly. That he supposedly had a heart attack, but when he had what he was having is that he would go written that what it looked like when he died. His whole body would go into a whole, like an epileptic shock, that only his head and his toes were touching the bed, that he was arching so much. And that happened several times, and his friend ended up going there and gave him mouth to mouth and called the EMTs in. And so when they gave him the shock, his friend was still holding on to his shoes. Guess what? He didn't get shocked. And so the EMT says, oh, you don't want to hold on to his shoes because you'll get shocked the second time. And he goes, oh, I was just holding on. I mean, I was actually holding on to his socks. He's holding his feet down. And then he thought, well, what's going on? And so the people that were actually part of this, that were helping him out and knew him, and they were talking about that they were going to release some stuff, the couple actually live in Portland, came up to Portland, and that they would hear clicks on their phones. This is in the 70s, that they would hear clicks on their phones and actually hear people in the background.
Now, during this broadcast, you've heard those little clicks right now, so I'm assuming somebody may be listening in on us right now.
I just don't want those black cars to come to the front of the house.
I'm an easy target. I totally am. I know you guys can hear me.
No, it wasn't me. It wasn't me. It was him.
I'm going to switch the topics on this one.
So you have more crash sites.
Yes. So let's talk about... We'll talk real quickly about... Majestic 12 is not the only country to ever develop their own secret investigative work. So there's two other projects I came across in my readings. One place was called a thing out of Canada called Project Magnet. Now, the guy that we mentioned earlier, this Navarre Bush, happened to be real good friends with this guy by the name of Wilbert Brockhouse Smith. He was a part of the transportation department in Canada, and during the 1950s, they developed a project called Project Magnet from 1950 to 1952, and the idea was that this gentleman believed that if they could get a hold of a UFO, he believed that they were running on a magnetic, geomagnetic kind of force to be able to travel the speeds that they could without the sound being transmitted or the fiery wake from a rocket or a jet engine or something along those lines. And he made a small setup, and they set him out just about 10 miles outside of Ontario, Canada, and partially from the stuff that he funded for himself so he could actually track stuff. But this was a group that was set up until the guy passed away later on, unfortunately. But Project Magnet was shut down in 1954, and then it says that this guy Smith continued to keep doing his version of Blue Book up until 1962 when he died. And he was also good friends with us. So it seems to me that there's a lot of cross-pollination going across the borders between Canada and the U.S. And, of course, we already had NORAD, so we were having to share the same thing. One of the other ones that I came across was one actually in Russia, which is a Kapuskin Yar, which is a Russian facility. I guess apparently during the Cold War, Stalin was not only having rockets being developed and stuff like this, but they were actively going after UFOs, actually engaging them in
combat.
Engaged,
trying to knock them down. Yeah,
exactly. And the UFOs didn't like that, and so they started firing back.
Right. Well, they said they have a couple crashed ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, that's the
and this place is still active as far as an area is concerned.
Oh wow.
Oh yeah, and it's big.
Yeah.
Really, really big. But it's very austere. It doesn't have any of the niceties that you're going to find in the West or anything like that. They're going to have this.
No Coke machines?
No Coke for you.
Coke for you. Borscht machines.
Gross. Going to have some borscht in my cup of coffee or something. No, but it's an interesting setup that they have there as well. And there's a huge write-up about it, too, which is nuts. And then I came across another one, which is a Dulce base near the Colorado-New Mexico border, Dulce, New Mexico, which has only a small population, but there's a secret base out there of some kind. It's protected by a bunch of independent contractors. Amazing how these guys pop up.
Blackwater.
Yeah, exactly. There was a lot of talk about, there's the one guy in particular that had heard and had actually, a guy had done some mining. He was contracted by some contractors to dig an underground base, and he broke into a big hole. They ran into, broke the piping and stuff like that. So they went in, and this guy goes down into a hole and he's only got himself like a Walter Peake gun with him,
yeah,
and stuff like that. And a bunch of other guys. And they come into a subterranean tunnel with a bunch of American soldiers and aliens, and they're fighting each other and shit. And it's like this guy gets shot, and there's physical indications that this guy had been shot. He lost like four fingers because,
wow,
he got hit by some sort of beam weapon.
Right.
And he ended up dying of, like, well, mysterious.
Had an accident?
Yeah. Dying here in Oregon in 96.
Wow.
And saying that, you know, there was all this kind of stuff going on.
That goes back to our lizard people.
Yes. And experimentation and so on like that. Phil.
So was Phil about? What was Phil about?
Okay, so Phil's initial thing was he was an engineer. He was just an engineer,
yeah,
and he had ended up going in here because he was contracted by the feds to continue to keep digging this area for a military base.
Right.
And you busted in on another base that was already there? What the fuck?
Which means
is
they,
up with that?
They didn't know. Well, this is what one of they said that with the government is that it's departmentalized, right? So when they go in and they go into the congressional meetings, when they're asked these questions, some of them don't know because they don't know the answers. And one of the senators says, you have to ask the right person to get the right answer.
You're never going to get a straight answer from anybody.
So that's what we're saying. Each department does not talk to each other in this situation. So when they had the 2 years ago, it's almost a little bit less, more than 2 years ago, the Congress had the meeting with about UFOs. And they had a lot of people they were talking about. And basically that's what happened is they would ask these questions. Do you know about, you know, reverse engineering? Do you know about? And they go, oh, no. Do you know this colonel? What's somebody's guy's name who's important into this? And they go, no, we do not know him. And they're going, and then it finally came out that basically they don't know because they're not privy to that information, that there's information that's let out and some not. And some areas where it's so top secret that only several people know. The president doesn't know. The department of the head of what we call it, Secretary of State,
so
all those.
There's a reason why that if you listen to any of the things that David Grush was doing when they were having the UFO investigative stuff on the Hill just recently, not probably about a year ago or so, him talking about that he couldn't talk about it, but he could talk to him in a skiff, which is a private conversation that you're going to have with senators. to let them know. It's like, look, I can't reveal that information to you, to the general public, but I can reveal it to you if you get the okay for a skiff.
In the cone of silence.
Silence.
Silence. Okay, what, can you hear me?
Am I on? Yeah, all right, Senator, this is what I know. But, a couple of the other Roswellian... Is that even a word? I'm copywriting that right now.
Roswellian.
Copyright Alan Bennett 2024. Boom. Mark it on your... that's it, mine. All right. So the other ones I come across was the Shag Harbor UFO incident.
Shag. I wonder if there's a lot of shagging going in the harbor.
There must be. The shagging of fish. In Nova Scotia. So there was in October of 67, there were reports of a flying disc that was spotted by Air Flight Canada 305.
Over Oak Island.
No, not quite. Not sure exactly when. Oh, 7:15 p.m. A yellow object was sighted. This thing had been spotted by a bunch of teenagers that had been out and about coming across, and it looked like it was coming in along the side of the bay, and they had spotted this thing, but it looked like it was having trouble staying up for some reason or something like that, and then it crashed into the harbor itself. In its wake, which was about a half a mile long, it left a bunch of yellow foam up above the surface of the thing. Now, a lot of people believed it at the time that it was a crashed airplane because they saw the lights and stuff like that. But there was something very odd about the way this thing was coming in. Hmm. So it left a trail. There were fishermen that had been called out to retrieve bodies from a crashed airplane, but they didn't find any bodies. But this thing sunk, and it went into the bay, and then they called all the RCMP.
Okay, yes.
Royal Canadian Mounted Police. And they brought them in, and they did research of the harbor for like 2.5 days. Couldn't find anything. But there's a kind of a branch governmental thing between the United States and Canada, once again, where secret stuff was going on. Now, according to one of these things, I think it's Shelley Island or something like that, I believe. Yeah. That they have this co-op base where they brought some stuff to any kind of crash retrieval thing there, and then it just disappeared into the records, and you never heard about it.
Of course it did. It always does.
And the American cousins took it, probably. Would be my guess.
You have some more there too, didn't you?
I did, and this
is the good one.
All right, so they are MPC or PC.
Royal Mounted Police.
Yeah. I can never remember these things. It drives me nuts. It makes me crazy.
I'll get you now.
Oh God! Please no. But there are, the village is still there. They even have, like, just like Roswell, they have little get-togethers, and they have these like, the UFO thing that showed up here. Not unlike here in Oregon, down in McMinnville, you have the UFO festival that takes place there every year.
Oh, and it's so fun. It is so fun. And then you stay at the McMinnums and go up on top, and they have a party up there.
Oh, I bet.
And they dress up. But the cool part is... The bar is on top of the building, open. So, yeah, if there's any UFOs, you'll see them.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure people are seeing it, especially after a few drinks.
By the way, I looked at the sightings for just Oregon, and it was outrageous. It was like 1,500. No, it was more than that. In just the Portland area, it was 500 and something sightings.
Oh, really?
Of UFOs.
In this general area?
In this general area.
It makes me question the people who are reporting these things, because some of those guys are probably doped up on some microshrooms or something like that.
So
nothing against that. I'm just saying that
right.
You might have seen something that maybe you hadn't.
So he has this one about in England.
Yes. Okay. So there's a thing called the Rendlesham Forest Incident. which takes place back in December of 1980 in England. According to this, back in December, it seems like there's a lot of latter part of the year sightings. So as we get closer to December, look up. You might see something.
That's not Santa.
Wow. Rudolph by the red nose. According to this, Ministry of Defense security guys at the RAF Woodbridge had seen lights apparently nearby the Rendlesham Forest, and they were descending, and they were thinking it might possibly be some natural debris that was burning up as a fireball or something like that over southern England at the time. Servicemen were dispatched to go out and investigate to find out what was going on there. One serviceman, Sergeant Jim Penderson, later claimed that he had encountered a craft of unknown origin while in the forest, and there was no publicized mention of this at the time, or no collaborating witnesses either. Now, keep in mind, too, that this, again, 1980, Cold War is still going on.
Yep.
Okay. And so Rendlesham was a combination of RAF and American Air Force at the same time. So, again, we have another combined group of individuals from two different governments working
together. That's where you saw the red ball
in the forest.
And followed it.
Now, the first time I'd ever heard about this was Undiscovered Mysteries or something like that, one that Robert Stack was doing for NBC. And I thought this was a bizarre, crazy event that had been published by the servicemen there. Apparently, this was not the only time. So the 26th, the day after Christmas, so you got no Santa to blame it on, okay? Just saying. Unless Rudolph decided to come back down with his red nose and was trotting through there looking for Bambi's mom or some shit like that.
Bambi's mom.
Yeah, why not?
I think Godzilla fixed that.
Yeah, totally burned him. It tastes like veal. Anyway, so apparently on the 28th of December, same area, another vehicle had been spotted. And in this particular instance, you had a deputy commander named Lieutenant Colonel Charles Holt visited along with several airmen about 28 hours later to go and took radiation readings, triangle depressions in the ground, standard military radiation survey detector. They Microgens, I think, is what they recorded there, here. So, like 0.07 microgens per hour in the region detected, as opposed to something else for background radiation. I'm not sure how that works into. I only know that radiation works in rads most of the time.
Right.
So I'm not sure how that is done. But there also talk about that there was an actual vehicle that had landed that also had something that looked like hieroglyphics of some sorts. But here's the thing. Unlike any of the Russians who are actively told to actively go after UFOs, there was a mandate set up by the military at this point that do not engage or use any kind of weapons whatsoever, period. And I think in this particular case, it showed that, okay, we know that you guys, and we're talking you guys in a general sense for other life forms coming here, we will not attack you. Please don't kill us, because there's no way we can defend ourselves against you guys. So just do what you need to do, get it, and get the hell out of here. Number of things. There was a crazy other amount of reports on this as well. They thought that initially when they started doing investigative stuff that this light that they had seen in the background in the forest was coming from a lighthouse far away. Nope, not the case. They said that they'd seen a number of other stores and stars and stuff in that area. There's a couple memos. There's the actual recorded tape as he actually, Holt, goes up to the vehicle itself. And there's actually a written documentation.
They have all his, when he called into the base. Because he called into the base, they actually have that recording and stuff. I've actually heard that before.
And there's also talk that one of the secondary craft that had come in to the forest, and it didn't crash land or anything, but it was sending down a beam, which is above a bunch of where they had a bunch of nukes.
Right.
And the nukes started acting all kind of crazy and stuff.
Oh, so we'll bring to that one where they had the ICBMs.
Yes.
And there was a 13 of them.
Mm-hmm.
At, they had UFOs come over them. Basically, they shut the whole thing down. They turned them off.
They triggered them like they're going to go into a countdown.
Yeah.
And then they turned them off.
Yeah. Which proves they're saying, hey, good. Look what we can do.
Exactly. If you guys really want to start a war, it would be preferred if you didn't.
So now UFOs are called UAPs.
Unidentified flying phenomena.
Yes. And then there's the other ones, the water ones. Which is that? Which the
USOs?
USOs, yes. USOs. Hey, they give a show. De-de-de-de-de-de. Oh, not that USO.
Yeah. I'd have to dig a little bit more into the Rendlesham thing, but it was, but again, this is taking place on a military base,
yes,
which is unlike some of the other ones. And to me, it has a very large significance because of the way it was reported. Since then, there have been other military installations that have had other visitations. I think the latest one that I ever saw was the one that was actually taking place in one of the areas where the U.S. had a base set up in the desert near in Iraq or Iran, I think, at the time, that jellyfish.
Yes, that's the new one, the jellyfish.
Yeah, that was a bizarre-looking thing.
Yes, it's really weird. I don't know.
I'm not sure what to make of it, but it's traveling quietly, and it's changing its color on the thermal, but you can't see it on any kind of radar.
Yeah.
How does that work? And then apparently, according to what I've heard also, is that this thing travels over a body of water and actually goes in.
Yes.
Stays down there for about 20 minutes, and then shoots out at a high speed out of the water.
Well, it could be something that we finally just... It could be something that was frozen. Who knows?
Possibly. It's hard to say. I mean...
Oh, maybe we need to call the Ghostbusters.
You probably could. I remember I've been seeing reports that, like, if you take a really close look at this, and it's just like, it's a fuzzy image that you enhanced on your computer because that's the only kind of cutting tool you actually had access to and know how to use.
Yeah.
And you enlarge it and say, look, see, you can see an alien in there. It's like, no, you can't. That's a shadow, you dumbass. I mean, seriously, you take a look at some of these photos, it's like, is it a bizarre-looking thing? Yes. But to say that you can see an alien piloting this weird-looking little ship, no.
No, you can't.
You know? I mean, so there's another, the idea that you, the Las Vegas crash land and the...
Now you said look through it. Just brought me up this another thing that was discovered and made. They made clear metal.
Oh, yeah.
You can actually see through it.
I've heard of something like this. It's not transparent aluminum, which is the first thought that comes to my mind.
Yeah, no, it's actually thick, and it's metal, and you can actually see through it.
I think that'd be rad.
Oh, yeah.
And it's got a tensile strength much more...
It's going to go into submarines. Yeah, so they can actually have look outside.
What are you going to
like
see?
Like the sea view.
Oh, my God.
You can breathe. Oh, look.
Look, Admiral Nelson, you can see the giant squid coming towards us. Little did you know that actually it was invented by a little-known captain named Nemo that came up with that idea. Just saying.
But, oh, you know, never thought about it. I just don't get those things together sometimes. That is really just the remake.
You think?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. That's funny.
Irwin Allen's ripping off everybody.
Oh, yeah. So we're at the end of this one. We're not done with UFOs.
Oh, hell no.
So
hell
no. We're going to bring up some stuff that might scare you because there's actually stuff that's been brought out by people that worked in the government, what they're saying. And with that, that's the cliffhanger.
Oh, yeah.
So okay. This is Paul.
And this is Alan.
And thank you for listening. And this is part one.
Brought to you by Lahaina Music. Lahaina, Maui. Unexplained mystery music by Sound Roll in the Upbeat app.